Welcome back to the Teep This Podcast, a podcast devoted to illuminating the sport and culture of Thai boxing in America and around the world. I'm your host, Charles Little II, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Authentic Muay Thai Supply. Authentic Muay Thai Supply provides an array of original gear directly from Thailand to beginner and professional athletes at the best prices. We want to share great products, spread ideas, and connect with the community. Based in Los Angeles, not only can you purchase from our online store, but we partner with several Muay Thai promotional events nationwide and bring the fight shop to you. You can find Authentic Muay Thai Supply online right where it sounds at AuthenticMuayThaiSupply.com. Just like it sounds, follow them on Instagram also at Authentic Muay Thai Supply or hashtag AMTS Worldwide. So please check them out as they are completely legit and they are the real deal. The folks behind Authentic Muay Thai Supply, they travel to Thailand directly and beyond in the area to curate the very best in authentic Muay Thai gear, fight equipment, and apparel, and they bring it back here for us so that we can have access to what we would otherwise not have access to. So you'll find all types of authentic apparel there, as well as brands like our very own Teep This. They carry our shorts and t-shirts, brands like Satrawoot, Nak Muay Legends are just a few. Although Authentic Muay Thai provides combat sports equipment and apparel for any fighter, they are specifically oriented toward the Muay Thai athlete and Muay Thai culture. So let's keep growing the sport as authentically as we can and support the entities like Authentic Muay Thai Supply that are doing just that. And without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Doctor of Physical Therapy, Board Certified Sports Clinical Specialist, and Sports Performance Consultant, Dr. Jason Park. Let's get into the podcast.
Say it again. My adversaries take a left, right, straight to the chin. Playing the wind, play with my hands, you lay in the sand. With your feet up, rather get my feet rubbed. Vibing out to deep cuts. My name be in my enemy's mouths. We cut from a different cloth. Hennessy style, we finna be out chilly. Somewhere way, way, way out overseas. There is no need to think twice or blink twice. You know we live this fight. We've been this night since dudes was rocking British nights. Get it right. Homie, you know me. I be low key. That's on me. Me, oh my. Kick so high, you go fly. It's the art of eight limbs. Yes, it's Muay Thai. Check the stovetop. So hot. Hot. Keep a jab in the stash. Homie, dash. I bet this round kick that you won't last.
So if it's on and it's on, let me know. Homie, take this. Homie, deep this and eat that mat like a deep dish.
Jason Park, we've been trying to do it for a minute, but good to have you here.
Good to be here.
It's a good weekend. So what have you been doing this weekend?
This weekend was a pretty good weekend of fights. As things have been getting busier in the fight world, people have been growing up. You know, we have fighters fighting all over. And having a lot of different people in the network, it's nice to see so many people flourishing.
Yeah.
You know, one of my big goals is to spread striking and Muay Thai in particular as a thesis for martial arts. And that includes in the Muay Thai ring, in the kickboxing ring, and also MMA.
Now say that statement one more time.
One of my big goals is that I want to bring Muay Thai as the thesis for martial arts.
What does that mean?
You know, I fell in love with Muay Thai a long time ago. About 16 years is when I started. And I came over from Taekwondo, Hapkido background. You know, at first I wanted to just add boxing, Filipino martial arts, and look for the magic elixir in martial arts. And I came across Muay Thai and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with like the pure power that it possesses. And biomechanically, it's one of the most sound and powerful martial arts out there. And I think it's a perfect thesis of how to fight as a ring or a cage sport. Now, of course, there's grappling and, you know, ground game, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when they're standing, I think Muay Thai is still one of the most powerful martial arts out there, and it's been my thesis.
Is it one of the most powerful martial arts, or is it the most devastating martial art?
Well, I think it's part and parcel. Like, you know, you have to always put it in context with how it evolved. So I have this theory, like it's a kind of like evolutionary theory, right? That part of Muay Thai success is the rule set and the environment that it put the competition. And I believe that if other martial arts, say karate, kung fu, you know, any number of martial arts, if they were put in those same constraints, it would have evolved to something similar.
And by those same constraints, you mean actually utilized for war?
Well, not even for war. Like, for war is one thing, but if we're talking about for sport,
yeah,
Muay Thai has been a combat sport that involves money for a very long time. It's a prize fighting sport. And prize fighting sports, it just brings on a whole different level of intensity.
Interesting.
Because money's involved.
Hmm.
So let's take the example of judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. There's a reason why judo became such an amazing martial art. It's because, you know, he took all these different martial arts from jiu-jitsu, aikijutsu, aikido, but really, if we were putting it simply, Jigoro Kano, he brought all the jiu-jitsu martial arts, which were those historic martial arts from the samurai days, and he put it into a modern context. What will we use from those martial arts? What's useful for our everyday life? And, you know, they would put on the gi, they kind of created a curriculum, and they created a competition rule set.
Shit, you're schooling the shit out of me.
Yeah, so when that happens and you go, oh, everyone's agreeing to these same rules, what happens to the people who are trained at martial art? They're going to get better and better at that rule set.
Right.
You know, and the argument of Taekwondo, karate, like Shotokan karate, as an example, or Kyokushin karate, which is a devastating martial art in its own end, people make the argument that they are not good martial arts. And I would go, well, they are really good martial arts. They're exceptionally good martial arts for the rule set that they have adhered to.
Right.
And that's a modern kind of transference over the last 50 years.
Hmm.
Each of those martial arts said, we're going to say no low kicks, no punches to the head. Well, then you're going to evolve. It's just like any other level of Darwinism.
Because you're going to have to.
Yeah, it's like the old Darwinism idea of, you know, these birds were the same bird that went to different islands.
And then they just adapted
to whatever that island needed.
Right.
I think that's the same with martial arts. The thing that puts boxing and Muay Thai apart from everyone else is they had Queensberry rules.
Which means?
Boxing gloves.
Okay.
You have a set ring,
uh-huh.
You know, a square ring, and you have 3-minute rounds, 1-minute rest.
Whereas, what, other martial arts?
They had other rules.
Different rules.
But, and they allowed for full combat. You know, like bare knuckle boxing was, you know, no set rounds. You know, it was like, go as long as you can, bare knuckle. You might break your hand, break your nose, but some reason is going to be the reason why you have to stop the fight.
Sure.
You know, when they added on the gloves and the Queensberry rules, then it changed everything. You know, it was set rounds. You know, eventually that created scoring, and the hands were protected by the gloves, so you could start punching harder, punching more targets, because you no longer have to worry about different parts of the face breaking your hand. And it kind of modernized and civilized some parts of the sport, but also created its own martial art. And you know, that's a consideration we have to take when we go from Muay Thai and boxing to MMA, because you're changing the glove type.
Right.
Now you have to be, again, more protective to the hand. So you're seeing this evolution again. So,
holy shit.
I really look at Muay Thai and boxing as top level
striking
martial arts.
Right.
Just because it had
the
rule set
right.
for so long. Like,
right.
like boxing was late
19th 1800s?
Century, yeah, late 1800s,
yeah,
early
yeah.
1900s.
Yeah, no, I think late 1800s.
Late
actually.
1800s, yeah.
yeah.
And Muay Thai is not that long after. It's like early 1920s or so that they started playing with these rule sets.
Mm-hmm.
But by the 30s, 40s, it's already been long established.
Sure.
And you're going to have evolution. Mm-hmm. You're going to have stronger evolution because now money's involved.
And that evolution's continuing now in the States as Muay Thai makes it to a Western culture. And, you know, we take it and we are evolving it in our own way. It's still, Muay Thai is still brand new here in the U.S. and its
For sure.
evolution, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely the, I don't want to say lowest evolved, but it's definitely the youngest of the Muay Thai branches is the United States.
Yeah.
Because they've been doing it in England, in France, in Russia.
Australia.
A lot longer. Australia too, yeah.
And I think each one of those, as we speak about them, we notice that they progressively get closer geographically to Thailand.
Kind of. I mean, I think England and France are also just as far apart. Maybe they just didn't have the influence of American kickboxing. Hmm. Like Benny the Jet, sure. You know, Superfoot Wallace, mm-hmm. that era of things.
Has that era influenced our Muay Thai at all here today?
I'm sure because, you know, you're going to have the influence of the old guard who might have had that exposure to it. And also you might have some people who still associate the term kickboxing to that. And so it takes a while to change that brand. And so you see in the States, we go Muay Thai and it's kickboxing, or Muay Thai kickboxing.
True.
Or kickboxing is different from Muay Thai.
True, we do use that.
The yeah, audience.
We use that word, and we'll, if you say Muay Thai, they'll go, I'm not, what are you talking about? And you go yeah. kickbox. Or you mean kickboxing?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But it's, well, what's the difference? You're kicking, you're boxing.
Well, one of my kind of, my big statements is that Muay Thai is the grandfather of it all. Hmm. If you're talking about kickboxing, Muay Thai had its influence in it at some point.
Hmm.
And you'll see it with how the Dutch kickboxing or Japanese kickboxing, I'm sure even American kickboxing, you know, saw how other martial arts were adapting to the kickboxing rule set, and they just added their own spin from whatever karate backgrounds we had in the States.
It's super interesting for me, because I did, as a person who did not grow up yeah. martial arts, did not grow up boxing, I mean, I'm so new, and like to, you know, to sit down and to just, whoa, it's like a whirlwind of information. Like, so how long have you been studying martial arts in particular?
Martial arts, I think it's been on and off since I've been like 7.
And did yeah. you, and how long have you practiced?
Well, like when I was younger, it was like, you know, when you're a child learning taekwondo, karate, you know, 2 to 3 days a week. And then probably when I was in my teens, I started wanting to do it more, 4 to 5 days a week. And so from early on, I had kind of a taste for it. And then when Muay Thai came along, it was just, it fit perfectly into the lifestyle.
Interesting.
I wanted something that can do more. Muay Thai demands a lot out of you.
It sure does.
Yeah. Time-wise, intensity-wise. Yeah,
physically, so, emotionally, logistically.
Yeah, so at that point, I think my life was, I was kind of ready for it.
So as a kid coming up, where did you grow up? Where was this happening on the planet?
I grew up in Los Angeles in the South Bay, in Palos Verdes Estates.
And how are your parents with you in the martial arts? Are they also martial arts enthusiasts?
No,
or?
No, not at all.
So this is just all you. You're just...
Yeah, I'm kind of probably one of the troublemakers.
Interesting. So are you...
Causing stress for people.
Bunch of siblings or...
Nope, only child. I'm the youngest of 19 cousins on one side and 3 on the other.
Interesting, interesting. So you're LA native and you've been in the martial arts game. So, you know, I do know... I think it's important to share your fight history with people so that people don't know that... They know you're a doctor and they know you study and that, you know, you understand movement from a kinetic standpoint, a biomechanical standpoint. You should talk, let's talk a little bit about the fact that you know what the fuck's going on with this sport because you fucking, you do it. You've done it. You fought. You have a fight history.
Yeah. It's been one of the hardest things when I'm trying to branch on multiple kind of professions and kind of brands of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing Muay Thai for quite a while. I've been blessed with really amazing teachers and mentors from the very first day.
So and you fought from when to when? What from what age to what age?
I was, my first smoker was probably at the age of 19, and then I stopped fighting at 25.
Wow.
I'm 32 now.
Wow, so that's 6 years.
Yeah.
Of fighting. And what era was that? Was that your first fight was in what year?
Let me think. That would be 2005 or 6 and stopping in 2011.
And were you with Brian Popejoy at that time?
Yeah, so I started training with Brian Popejoy at Boxing Works when it was in the Hermosa Beach location, the original location, 16 years ago.
Damn.
You know, I was very lucky because it was the first Muay Thai gym, or actually I was looking for boxing. And so it was the first boxing gym I found,
mm-hmm.
and he owned it. And he was, you know, it's more of a Muay Thai gym, actually. And, you know, when I started at Boxing Works, we had Evan Esquera and Mark Beecher being the main, you know, fighters there.
Fucking classic Mark
Beecher. So that's a pretty great way to get introduced to the sport was, you know, having those two as people to look up to and Brian to be the mentor and overall teacher for it. And, you know, when I started, I think... My other two main teammates that came with me were Moses Lopez and Mike Ellison. And so, like, it's a pretty cool to see that over those 16 years, we all, like, kind of stayed in the sport in some fashion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, for sure. I've been lucky enough to be in the company of Beecher a few times. And I, you know, I know Brian, and I've had a little time myself over at Boxing Works. So what was it like, your fight career? I mean, you know, talk to me just really briefly. How did it wrap up?
How did my journey, like, kind of go about? Well, like, I had a pretty unconventional way through. I traveled to Philadelphia, or moved to Philadelphia for school, for going to my undergraduate studies at Haverford College. Mm-hmm. That's in the suburbs outside of Philadelphia. And so, you know, obviously during the school year, I wasn't going to be training with Brian. So I eventually found a gym called Cool Hearts Muay Thai. That was out of Dadis MMA at the time. Cool Hearts was run by head coach Rigel Balsamico.
And this is 2004. Four.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pre the Ultimate Fighter era.
Wow.
And I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah,
I,
that is.
People laugh about it, but I distinguish that because, you know, the Ultimate Fighter show really changed the landscape of how people in America looked at combat sports. Like, I could feel the change. People were not interested in Muay Thai before. After Ultimate Fighter, people were starting to go, what is this? And then soon after Ultimate Fighter, what happened was George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva entered the scene at 2006. And there was like, these guys are way better strikers than everyone else. Mm-hmm. We thought we were doing elite level striking, but
what is this?
What is this?
Yeah, yeah. And they're full-on martial
artists. And that changed the sport even more. So I give a lot of credit to the UFC, the Ultimate Fighter, and specifically those two, George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva, for really changing how we as Americans and the world worldwide, but specifically in America, our appetite for Muay Thai increased a lot at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, as a Muay Thai purist myself, I mean, that's one of my main things, is I would love to see our appetite in this country increase for Muay Thai, simply because of what it's done to my life, how it's enriched my life, me physically, spiritually, emotionally, with my children, my life, my work, everything. George St. Pierre, Anderson Silva. So you, have you ever worked with GSP also? I know you work with Anderson. Did you also work with GSP?
No, I mean, I got to see him when I was younger, just being around close to New York City, because he trained with crew Phil Nurse and Henzo Gracie. He was just around there in that New York scene. So, you know, at fights, you know, I would run into him, and then I got to see his training a couple times. But, you know, not so much. But yeah, like, I was blessed to, like, when I went to Philadelphia, again, lucky, because my first gym that I looked for was Cool Hearts Muay Thai. Yeah, so Cool Hearts Muay Thai, we had at that time Aaron Meisner, who was eventually on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, Eddie Alvarez would stop by every once in a while. Wilson Hayes was training there and was the head jiu-jitsu coach. And Justin Greskowitz, who is a very standout for Muay Thai and kickboxing in the States, was there, you know. They were all amateurs at that time and growing to become pros. Mm-hmm. So again, I got lucky to have so many people who were with the sport for such a long time.
Yeah, you were in good company for sure.
Good company. And then, you know, alongside me in that team, like, a lot of young talents that were going to go up. And it's 10 years later, like, it's come pretty true.
And when we say go up, I mean, up just really equals MMA, correct?
No. I mean, Justin didn't really go into MMA.
I know.
But he did everything in Muay Thai in the States. You know, fought on Glory recently. Like, you know, he definitely has over 50 fights.
Which is tough to do.
He's been doing quite a long time.
I mean, in the USA with regard to Muay Thai, you know? I mean, so.
And you know, I think for me, that was a big blessing, because having that time on the East Coast, one, I got to be acquainted to people on the East Coast. I saw what East Coast Muay Thai, especially in Maryland, tri-state area, in Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Boston. I got to see what they were doing over there. And, you know, that creates, for me, I lost that point of tribalism. You know, we have tribalism everywhere. It's part of human nature. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for us to go, oh, American Muay Thai, that's French Muay Thai, we're different. West Coast Muay Thai, East Coast Muay Thai were different. Uh-huh. And for me, having bridged a lot of those gaps early on, you know, because, again, right after college, I moved to Thailand, lived there for a year to train, and fight out in Thailand, you know, I met a lot of international talent as well. And so for me, I think I had this really unique situation where I got to see so many great gyms early on and great practitioners. I said, kind of evaporated that tribalism in my mind.
Sure. You're crossing all the lines.
Yeah, it's like, how are they all doing so well? And what's the truth in it? What's the unified truths between all these different practitioners?
Have you found a common thread between, I mean, that's powerful what you're talking about. I mean, Phil Nurse at the Watt, Brian Popejoy at Boxing Works, that in itself.
I actually also got two summers working with Conor Oyama back when he was at No Limits.
Wow.
Just seeing Romeo Danza.
Well, yeah.
You know, Bao Quach, all those guys, you know, Rampage Jackson, when they were in their prime or coming into their prime.
Coming up, yeah.
Rampage was already in his prime with Pride,
okay.
Which was a big like influence on me when I was in high school watching Pride, seeing the Shooter Box Wars, you know.
I don't even know that shit.
Oh, Shooter Box is where Anderson Silva trained for quite a bit as well.
So I can see
Shogun Hua.
I can see the old Pride stuff now on UFC Fight Pass.
For sure.
Yeah, I've passed it sometimes when I'm scrolling. So tell me, as a layman, if I go to New York for a month and train at the Watt, let's say I train at the Watt for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say I come back and I train here in LA for 6 months. What's the common thread I'm going to find? What's the conflict I might find? And I know this is all relative and it's all, what's the word, subjective, you know, dependent on the individual. But is there any like thing to share between what commonality or what differences you find within that tribalism that you've already transcended?
I think it's hard work and intentional practice.
That's common.
That's the common thread.
Hmm.
But it can appear in so many different ways. I think it took me a long time to really kind of synthesize it to those two things.
Sure.
Because before it would be really concrete examples. Now I can pretty much say hard work, volume of practice, and intentional practice.
Not just doing it.
No, not just going through the motions, but doing it with intention.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing to really teach. Because that takes the understanding on the intellectual side and also crafting it so you can feel it. You can trust it. It becomes a part of you.
Man, that's powerful. I remember my first couple fights. Some of the most important work that I did was by myself on that bag. You are very correct. It's so different. It's one thing to be in class. It's another thing to be one-on-one with your crew or working with a teammate. But then when you're alone, you really have to think, envision, and understand, and feel, and think about why you're doing every little thing you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about Muay Thai, is taking what Muay Thai gives us out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been bringing that with me into my life.
It's funny that you mention about bag work, because I mean, a number of fighters will always say, you know, a good number of fighters will say bag work tells you everything. It teaches you everything about fighting in boxing or in Muay Thai. Kevin Ross is one of the ones who I think stands out strongly in saying like, the bag work taught me everything.
Interesting.
And you know, this shows where, you know, those three things I talked about are the main components, the most important components, but how you practice that intentional practice can mean any number of ways.
Hmm.
So for me, and I'm an extreme extrovert, bag work, shadow boxing, it's like hellish for me. I don't want to be just by myself. So for me, what I loved about boxing and Muay Thai was the drilling, the sparring, the pad work,
mm-hmm.
the interaction between two people.
Sure.
And you know, when I was there at Cool Hearts, you know, I wasn't a fighter at that time. And I was like 2 years in, you know, definitely not like a standout talent in sparring right off the bat. If there's someone who says like, oh, like 3 months, this guy's already a beast, I was not that
guy, right.
So for me, you know, Crew Brian Popejoy teaches us to be really good pad holders.
Sure.
We're really good with our pad work. I'm sure you could see that through our Instagram and YouTube videos at Boxing Works. We're really good with our, you know, our technique and our like drills and pad work.
Sure.
We do a lot of it and we become quite good. And so when I went over to Philadelphia in 2005, I'd say 2005, it wasn't as developed back then, you know, over there.
Pad work itself.
Or just Muay Thai was not as popular as it was in California.
Like, sure.
We have such a big standout. There was only a few gyms at that time on the East Coast. You know, it's just one of those things of just location.
Yeah, a ton of boxing going on.
But yeah. And it was a long travel for me to go from my college all the way to the gym. It was like three train transfers, 3 hours total, like 2.5 to 3 hours to get to the gym and come back.
Damn.
And so when I trialed out the class, you know, it was like the intermediate class, the, you know, everyone class. And I was not going to travel that far to be randomly having a pad holder. Like, I didn't know who I was going to have. No one there was really developed to be pad holding at that time.
Okay.
And you know the trouble is, even now, if you, you know, people talk about that with class. Oh, if I go to class, I don't know, I might be, you know, paired up with someone who is really good, has a great day, or it's someone who doesn't know what they're doing, and it's like, it's a waste, right? And so for me, that was kind of my in. I had no intention of fighting at that time. You know, I was okay at sparring. And so I was audacious, pretty audacious. And I asked, you know, crew Rigel, I was like, you know, this is really tough. This is, I have to travel a long bit. You know, I really want to do more pad work. Is there a longer session, like maybe with some fighters who are sparring, where I can be involved? And he asked me, I remember vividly, he's like, well, are you a fighter?
Yeah.
I was like, no. He's like, okay. Well, are you good at sparring? I was like, I'm okay. He's like, then why should I let you go into the fighter's training? And I said, well, like, I'll get better at sparring, but I think I'm pretty good at holding pads for people, at least like holding for kicks, holding for punches. And he said, you know, okay, let's try it and just come in. And so I jumped right in, you know, I got beaten savagely for sparring.
Sure.
You know, and those guys are beasts that are over there. Some guys, you know, made it pretty high, and some people became famous out of that, and some people, you know, didn't achieve the biggest fame, but they were all killers there.
Yeah, and the East Coast, you know, we know how East Coast mentality is anyway.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? It's a no shit's given. Let me tell you, being an LA person going to Philadelphia, it is
especially if they find
not
out,
easy.
If they find out you're from LA. Yeah, you know, homeboy's from LA, get the fuck out. Give him to me.
Soft.
Oh yeah.
Don't even start complaining about the cold.
Don't do it.
Yeah. but you know, for me, pad work was really what connected me with other people. And it's where I learned how to fight. So because I had a little bit of control of the situation.
Sure.
And I was watching these other fighters at different levels.
So you're giving things.
I was watching first, like, oh, wow, that hit really hard. All that push, like, what are they doing? And, like, just thinking, again, audaciously, what advice could I give them? What feedback could I give them?
Without, to make like, them, to make them
like,
better.
Yeah, and then I started, like, maybe do this. And I was like, oh, that hit harder. I was like, that started to play in my mind. It also taught me about ranging, you know, because I'd have to, you know, feel out the range. Oh, that's where they can land that powerful kick. There's a little off.
What's compounding your learning at the same time? Are you in school at the same time?
Yeah, I was in school at the same time.
And what are you studying in school?
I was studying molecular biology and history.
Interesting.
It was a tough school too. So I would study on like my travels over there, but you know, Muay Thai was my escape also.
Yeah.
Because it was a small liberal arts school.
Yeah.
Predominantly white, not many Asian Americans. Uh-huh. There were some transfer students. So it was a very different vibe than what I had here in Los Angeles, coming to a big public school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I graduated from a school that was 4,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, half Caucasian, half Asian American.
Yeah.
And then going to the East Coast where there weren't that many, there wasn't much diversity
on
campus. It was a hard struggle to kind of, and it was a small school and everyone was coming from boarding schools.
Damn.
So I didn't really fit in. Like, I come from LA, I listen to hip hop, I'm Asian American. A lot of those people just didn't have that kind of concept of who I was.
Yeah.
And so Muay Thai was my way to kind of go back to having a strong, clear human experience without, you know, the superficial being the barrier. You know, because, you know, Muay Thai has led me to meet people of all creeds, races, nationalities, ages, genders, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing about Muay Thai, you know, it don't care.
It transfers past all those other barriers.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
You can not speak a word of the same language, but you can still learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing.
This is deep for me, too. Like, here you are holding pads at a pretty high level. You know, especially
I was 19. You know,
and you're young. You're young, holding pads at a high level, especially at that time. Where, in your opinion, do you think some of the instincts are coming from for you to say, "Hey," and actually give this striker a piece of advice, or to try maybe, you know, angling yourself a little bit more, or push your hip forward a little bit? Where is that coming from, in your opinion, at that time?
You know, I think it's a combination of intuition and curiosity. You know, intuition just being like,
right,
maybe that's a better way. Just looking at the movement, just being like, maybe that could be a better way. And then the curiosity being like,
I wonder if,
yeah,
let me try it. Yeah.
You know, maybe that's the scientist side of me, you know, learning in molecular biology. It's just scientific process. Let's try it. And then probably the last thing, again, I always have to put in, is that I'm so thankful that all my peers and my mentors could handle my audacious personality, because I am outspoken, and you know, it does ruffle a lot of feathers at the beginning, but it's all with good intentions. But
sure.
But it is audacious to go to tell someone who has more experience, or you know, has a few more fights, but just, you know, it's nothing. It's just giving feedback.
Yeah.
And that's how I always gave feedback, is it's just well-intentioned. It's not with me looking with judgment and saying, oh, you're not kicking hard, you know, oh, you could do this better. It's just, I think this could help. Do you want to try it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, look, I crossed a lot of those bridges too, you know, being such a newbie in this culture, not just mm-hmm. sport, I mean, in this whole culture, because it's a whole world and it's a dangerous one, and people put it all on the line. And here comes this guy, you know, and you're just like, yo, I want to podcast you. I want to talk to you. I want to hang out with you. You know, I want to be with you. I want to train with you. And they're like, dude, who is this guy? You know, so.
Well, and this is the hard thing is, you know, in that situation, people go, why? Why do you want to do that?
Yeah.
Why are you asking me these questions?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think, where the curiosity and having an abundance mindset is so important. It's being curious and seeing, how can this work for me? And not like, oh, this is a hindrance, or he's trying to, you know, one up because of my fame. It's like, how can this also be something to help me? I would say people who are in your field, like who are in your shoes, and this is what I do still as a coach, is I just go, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
Like, this is the product that I want to create, and part of it becomes, I propose it by going, I can do this, but it's not never asking, what can I do for you?
Right.
And maybe I have to put out some examples, but for you with the podcast, is like, not many people are talking about this story.
Right.
And fighters need exposure.
Sure.
Fighters need exposure for sure if this whole sport is going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But fighters need to live, and they need exposure to grow their audience and sponsorships.
They need a little acknowledgement. It really fucking helps. I mean, you know, we put it all on the line.
And for what?
What you said, the key words that you said was, you said abundance mindset.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, man, that's what I have a hashtag I use all the time, hashtag why I love Muay Thai, and that would be under hashtag why I love Muay Thai. It's the abundance mindset. I have an abundance mindset. I always have had an abundance mindset. But to your point, you're right. When you come in the room like, oh, my glass is half full, you can share some. You know, it can put set people aback a bit, you know.
Yeah. Curiosity too, right? Like,
yeah.
I think I have, because of my extroverted personality, like, I am very curious as to what is going on behind those eyes for everyone. I love like connecting with people and just seeing what they're thinking.
And
that's a very intimate situation where some people might be put off at the beginning.
But look at where it's brought. Look at where it's brought you.
Yeah.
And look at how many people it's touched and it's continuing to touch. I mean, let us know exactly what it is that you do. When I first heard of you, you were described to me as, the term was Dr. Jason Park.
Okay.
Dr. Jason Park. You just talked to Dr. Jason Park. I saw you online. It was over here at the Thai Boxing Institute with Crew Vic. So tell us, are you a doctor? What does Jason Park do?
Okay. So I think it is confusing for a lot of people because it seems like it's so spread out.
Right.
But to put it simply, I like to make people move better and then more effectively and more efficiently. So again, like, moving better is a broad term, right? Moving better, you can stop moving because it hurts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's more on the physical therapy, and I'll go into it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, to move better, you gotta be more powerful and more efficient. And it's a big cycle of those three things. Doesn't hurt, more powerful.
More efficient.
More efficient.
That's good.
Right? So how that goes out is, you know, I'm a striking coach. So I focus a lot on Muay Thai and boxing uh-huh. for a number of different athletes. Muay Thai, kickboxing, and MMA athletes.
Yes.
I work on their striking. Mm-hmm. Again, with boxing and Muay Thai to be my thesis of how to achieve success. Mm-hmm. But also being open-minded and eclectic in the different martial arts that I've been exposed to and continue to be exposed to.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, if someone like one of my good fighters, Adel, who just fought on Bellator, he's a Kyokushin world champion. Kyokushin black belt for many years.
How old is he?
He is 30 now.
Okay.
I'm not going to throw away all those amazing elite class skills.
Right.
Just because I want him to do Muay Thai.
Right, just because he comes from another discipline.
Yeah.
Right.
And so
I had to kind of pull that.
Yeah, I had to pull into like my Taekwondo, which is, you know, a subset off of karate, like those old forms and the old techniques I learned. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, that's why their movements are a little different. That's why the kicks work a little differently. And so I had to meet them in the middle. I still believe in the thesis of Muay Thai as the sport because that is the closest thing that we do in MMA and Muay Thai, right? Or like combat sports, right?
Right, in combat sports,
if you're saying you can punch to the face, you can elbow to the face, you can knee to the face or the body,
right.
You can kick low kicks to head kicks, all are okay.
Muay Thai is
the closest thing.
Think to all of that.
All of that.
Right, true.
You know, Kyokushin would say, you hit low kicks, head kicks.
But there's no elbows.
But there's no elbows, there's no punches to the face.
Right.
You know, boxing, obviously, no kicks, just hands. You know, Taekwondo is no low kicks, no punches above the head.
No elbows. I mean, no elbows. Totally
so, Muay Thai is the closest thing that had all those things. And hitting so, full power with knockouts as a goal.
And so then tell me this. Is every MMA athlete studies Muay Thai? Is that true or no?
They study Muay Thai, but, you know, that depends on how level of, what's the depth of their understanding of Muay Thai.
Because
and what's the depth of their understanding from their teachers?
Because one of the terms that gets on my nerves is the word striking.
Yeah.
You know, when I see these gyms that say, you know, we teach striking or you want to come in and work on some of your striking, I'm like, what are you talking about? How are you working on my strike? What do you mean striking?
Well, in that way, but I do have to explain it to some people that my job is to be a striking coach. Mm-hmm. But if you were to go into what is striking to me, my thesis is still Muay Thai.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I say thesis.
Yeah.
It can change, it can evolve, I can adapt it. But it's not just what are the techniques and how do I throw those techniques. It's the tactics behind them.
From whence they come.
Yeah, what's the distancing? How do I move? How do I position myself to choose my right weapon? And if you have that, you can still implement things from spin kicks. I mean, really traditional Muay Thai had spin kicks. But if I was to say, who does a better spin kick? A Muay Thai fighter
or
a Taekwondo Kyokushin fighter?
Right, I was going to say.
Taekwondo Kyokushin fighter is going to be better because their rule set emphasized that.
And they practice it all the time.
Yeah, it's just like how Ronda Rousey was so amazing with her submissions in a particular portion, right after the takedown, right after the throw. Mm-hmm. It's because she comes from a judo background, which has the same ground base as jiu-jitsu.
Like Daniels.
Yeah, but it's that you have that split-second advantage if you can submit them right away.
Sure.
Because in judo, if you submit them right when they hit the ground, they might be up on points.
But it's over.
But it's over.
I mean, there was a point in Ronda's first ascension where I almost didn't want to watch her anymore because
you're damn quick.
It was just too quick. I know what's going to happen. I'm like, look up at 1, 2, 3. Did she armbar her? Did she toss her and armbar her yet? Or what? Is it over? Yeah. I mean, what you say right now reminds me of Raymond Daniels.
Yeah.
You know, because he's got that karate background. And, you know, if you know how to throw those aerial spinning kicks. But he's really incredible to watch.
Yeah.
He's an amalgamation, you know. Sure. Talk to me about...
But you could still see with all respect to Raymond Daniels, like, I love watching him. It's great because it fulfills a curiosity of how do all these different ways of approaching martial arts work.
And super entertaining from a promoter standpoint.
Yeah, but, you know, there are certain reasons why Nicky Holskin did so well with him. And that's why I say the thesis of Muay Thai.
Yeah.
You know, pressure, ranging, maybe you... How you use those weapons.
Yeah.
Because Muay Thai, it's like you find... This, again, like it applies in all fighting sports, especially in boxing as well, but I really think it's like you have to know what you're establishing option A in fighting, right? Option A. So that could be, say, your jab.
Okay.
Get your jab to start working.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, once you get option A to be working and they're starting to adapt to it, how do you establish option B? And that could be a cross. That could be a low kick. That could be a body kick. Once they get, you know, now you're switching between option A and option B. Maybe you go option A, B, or B, A, B. You throw them off. But eventually they're going to catch on. Then you go, how do I establish option C, option D? And that's true Muay Thai. You know, it's not about just throwing everything out there and shotgunning. Like true Muay Thai boxing, because they're fighting other elite fighters.
Yeah.
You can't just throw everything. Maybe you get a puncher's chance, but if you're skill for skill, it's a chess game. It's establishing my first move and seeing what reactions you get.
And then moving on from that.
And moving on from that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, one of the things after watching so many different fighters, I mean, I remember watching certain fights where Kevin, our good friend Kevin Ross, fought, and you could see his eye just notice something in the reaction in the second round. And then maybe third round, fourth round, fifth round, he would exploit
it, right.
And the big mistake that we have if we're not experienced is we try it right away. And then they see it and then now the game's over. You can't use that move. Yeah.
Keep that whole card.
Like I say for everyone who wants to do like a special move like a spin kick, you only get like two chances max at it. One, really.
And it should land.
It should land.
Yeah.
And maybe if you miss it, maybe you can make them forget about it and you can try it again.
And that's if you make them forget about it and then try it again. You just launch it right away.
And if you
do that,
you gotta really convince them that you got all these other weapons.
Yeah.
But really, it's about getting it once.
Yeah.
For a spin kick.
Yeah,
for sure. Or like elbows work a little bit better, but still like a spinning elbow, for instance. That's a close, like, you got maybe two chances.
Unless you're, you know, Gaston Bolaños, so.
In his fight. He's done it multiple times, but watch in his fights. He's not throwing four, five, six times.
I don't know. I think Gaston has thrown like four. I think I've seen him throw like four fucking
in the same fight?
In the same fight. But that's when his confidence is way up.
Sure, and, sure.
That's different. No, but I hear what you're saying. No, that's totally true. You know,
like,
that's
supreme totally true. Technique and supreme understanding of your weapon, you can break these rules a little bit more.
True.
You know, but it really takes a good understanding of your weapon and then knowing how to set them up.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about boxing, Muay Thai, is because it's been a skill versus skill sport in a tough situation, right? Like, it's not just competition. So Olympic competition is also tough. That's why wrestlers are really good.
Sure.
Judo athletes are really good. Their craft, jiu-jitsu athletes are really good. But there's something different when you put money on the line. Because no longer is it just like anybody is doing it. Now it's like you're signing a contract. You could use this to help improve the livelihood of your family.
Now I gotta eat. I'm eating.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's gonna change who's gonna come in. And the intensity of how they're gonna fight.
So are we now talking about how the gambling affects things, or are we just talking about the money period?
Just money period. Being a professional fighter. And Olympic athletes are professional fighters. They're just not being paid for it.
But that's what makes it all the difference.
But, like, I mean, if you were to pay the Olympic athletes, think of how many more people would go into that sport. And it's going to make it even more razor thin of how you have to be that much better to be at the top.
Yeah, that's a valid point. The top of the professional pile. Because there's the top of the amateur, even not to use it as a derogatory term, but, you know, the Olympics is technically an amateur sport.
For sure.
Even though it's the best in the world.
So it's not a thing about how hard they're working. They're sacrificing everything to be there.
Sure.
Right? They're sacrificing money to be there.
They pay money. They pay their own money.
But when you add money into the system, now more people have less friction to start going after that gold.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were to make the Olympics a prize fighting setup, can you imagine the flood of even more talent and how much more adapting there will be? It's just pure Darwinism.
Yeah. Talk to me about this, man. I've always, you know, wrestled with this whole MMA versus Muay Thai thing. I feel boxing really is in a new era, you know, today. So my question is, we talked about Muay Thai being a chess game. Will Muay Thai ever be entertaining enough for an American audience?
For sure.
Yeah.
I definitely think so.
Yeah.
It is. It's already in MMA.
I know it's in MMA.
So in MMA, what is it that people really are watching?
They're watching Muay Thai with a ground game.
Yeah, but what is the part that most people enjoy? Do they like stand up or do they like the ground?
I agree with you. They like stand. You know why? Because they like knockouts.
For sure.
They like blood. They like people's faces being exploded. For sure. They love flying kicks. But they do love seeing people get flipped up in the air and body slammed.
For sure. But if you were to put a poll out there of the general person,
yeah,
what do they like to see? Is knockouts or submissions? Probably more knockouts.
Knockouts.
And if you put ground and pound,
they do like
or
that.
Stand up, it'll still probably be stand up. They like the ground and pound. There's a viciousness to it.
Sure. But without the stand up. Yeah.
But they want stand up.
Yeah.
And so I think as a Muay Thai practitioner and a passionate or someone who has a strong passion for Muay Thai, one of my jobs is to put Muay Thai in whatever platforms people want to watch it. Eliminate the friction from people watching it.
Yeah.
So I want Muay Thai to win in Muay Thai rings, in kickboxing rings, and in MMA cages.
Cages, yeah.
Doesn't matter because it's going to increase people's curiosity about that sport.
ONE FC, ONE Fighting Championship is headed this way.
It's proved it.
Will they help?
For sure. Like, it's proved that people are interested in Muay Thai in whatever way you can get it.
Yeah.
You know, again, this is where you look at it as a martial art. Muay Thai, is it a martial art or is it a combat sport?
Sport, right.
Are you looking at it? What is it to you?
To me, it's a martial art.
Sure. Then you don't care if it's on MMA or it's in a boxing ring, for instance, like how they use their hands. You know, if it's a martial art, you want to see it work wherever it is. Yep. Whether it's self-defense,
yep.
Whether it's
if it's in a street, cage, if it's a street fight, if it's in the cage, if it's in the ring, yeah. I expect to see devastation and it should work. Yes.
And I love the art of Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
I love it more than probably all the other subsets. But I want the art of Muay Thai to work. Mm-hmm. The martial art of Muay Thai to work across the board. And for people to see the beauty of it. I'm not snobbish to go, I just want the sport to do well.
Agreed.
I think if more people know about the art, the sport will continue to flourish.
Sure, agreed.
Because look at ONE FC.
Mm-hmm.
It's done all three. And after ONE FC, how many more Muay Thai promotions do you see being added onto UFC Fight Pass?
A few now.
Yeah, you even hear Dana White now saying, look, we have the best jiu-jitsu, we have the best Muay Thai. You would never hear that 10 years ago.
I know.
But it's because the sport has evolved.
Yeah.
And it's not about tribalism. It's not about, our sport versus their sport. Because if you want to go like that, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
It's, again, abundance mindset.
Can we follow you on social media so we can keep up with all your insane magic that you're doing?
We didn't even get to talk about the physical therapy or the strength and conditioning.
Dude, we've got...
So we'll have to do it.
We'll have to revisit because there's too much to talk about. We've barely just scratched the surface with Jason Park. I mean, you're doing so much between the ropes, with inside the cage, on the massage table, in the office, in the gym, on the road. You're in different countries, different continents. I mean, you're giving.
Yeah.
You're completely giving, and it's coming back. But I love watching it. I like watching you give. You know, you've given to me. I mean, but you're giving, and I'm not saying that just to be saying it.
Yeah.
You literally are, and you enjoy doing it. And so it's been interesting for me to learn a bit more about your background, and it was powerful to hear that, well, here I come from an abundance mindset. What can I do for you?
Yeah.
Which completely accents exactly what you're doing right now in front of me. So
I mean, and that's why I love the conversation going more into the Muay Thai side of things, because this is our main topic on this sport. I could talk about later on, you know, how we help athletes in the combat sports, outside of combat sports, through physical therapy and strength and conditioning. But people can follow me. My main page is at Dr. Jason Park, at Dr. Jason Park, on Instagram. My website will also be kind of focusing on what I specifically do in all three of those funnels as a striking coach, as a physical therapist, and as a strength and conditioning coach.
Wow.
And, you know, Cool Heart Performance is going to be more of the physical therapy and strength and conditioning. And that's also the medical team that we go out with, the USMF, the United States Muay Thai Federation, for the IFMA Games. And that's so been such a great, that's an amazing way to give back.
Another whole topic we have to touch on. Is there a Jason Park facility in the future one day?
Maybe.
There should be, man.
Maybe. But, you know, again, it's about giving first, right? And so if I had a brick and mortar.
Another place where you can really give.
But if having, you know, there's a reason why I'm spread out to so many places, because if I have one brick and mortar, especially, you know, in LA, we're going to be limited to how many people can get in.
True.
But I am lucky to have, you know, trust of lots of great gyms. You know, my home gym, Boxing Works, the USMF athletes, you know, Anderson Silva and his team has entrusted me with quite a lot with his training and his sports performance physical therapy. And one of our partners, Dr. Hero Pereira, he's doing the same thing over there at Hard Knocks 360 with Henry Hoof's team.
And that's, where is that?
That's in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, down in Florida.
So it's a kind of like a nice match that we have, mixing physical therapy, strength and conditioning, and athletic training all together. And it's great to be able to do that on two different sides of the United States.
Yeah.
With really amazing athletes.
Yo, man, congratulations on everything that you're doing. This is only part one. We will definitely have to do a part two. Yeah, man. All right.
This episode is also brought to you by Cool Heart Performance. They help professional athletes, actors, and executives find the best expression of their human body in the midst of their chaotic daily lives. Cool Heart Performance is headquartered in Los Angeles and Miami, so they are available on both coasts, and they use their expertise, training, and experience to create and improve the elite athlete inside of you. Cool Heart Performance areas of specialty include performance, recovery, physical therapy, and consulting. I myself have personally worked with Cool Heart Performance's own Dr. Jason Park, and I can tell you that there are no words to justify having his level of practical combat sports experience, education, and training at your complete disposal. When Jason Park is working with you, he's working with just you. I've seen him work with up to three athletes at a time, but believe me when I tell you that he has a complete one-on-one relationship and understanding of each and every single one of his clients. When I was working with him, he had a pro fighter in the ring, an amateur fighter on the mat, and a pro soccer player on the turf. Nothing was ever rushed. He's always attentive. And Jason Park listens. He listens, which beyond even how important that is to what he's doing in the moment, it's a testament to his character as a human being. And I'm telling you, as a society, on the whole, we would all benefit from being better listeners. But that's a whole nother topic. Look up Cool Heart Performance online at coolheartperformance.com. And there you have it. If you're feeling like there's just more to dig into with Jason Park, A, you're correct, and B, you're not alone. I feel the same way, Jason and I both. So Jason has vowed to return to the podcast in short order to continue our conversation and go deeper still into the secrets of combat sports and all the insane knowledge that he's collected and continues to curate on his completely unique journey through combat sports and the world of human performance. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Teep This podcast and supporting Teep This and the world of Thai boxing in general. Let's send a big shout out to each and every dedicated soul that got up off their asses this year and made it to the middle of the country to attend the 2019 TBA Classic Muay Thai World Expo. Almost 900 registered fighters were on hand this year, of all ages, sexes, and from every walk of life. Indeed, Muay Thai has arrived here in the United States. We are off to the World Games in 2021, which will also be taking place on American soil here in Birmingham, Alabama. Muay Thai will be a part of the World Games, and America is planning on showing the world that we are a force to be reckoned with. Although Thai boxing did arrive only relatively recently here in America, in true Yankee fashion, we're adapting and are ready to dominate and show the world what American Muay Thai is all about. If you haven't gotten yourself into a Muay Thai gym and investigated what all the commotion is about, don't waste another day. Get online, search Muay Thai or Thai boxing in your area, and start the journey to the best version of yourself that you will ever know.
Homie, take this. Homie, take this. And eat that mat like a deep dish.
Join me on the next episode of the podcast for another deep dive with another unlikely guest that you won't find anywhere else but right here with me on the Teep This podcast. Stream the Teep This podcast directly from iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, or take the podcast in directly at teepthis.com. Please review and rate the Teep This podcast wherever you find the podcast, as it truly helps our visibility online and helps further illuminate the stories and conversations that we share here together. Your comments and requests are not taken lightly and always welcomed, so please feel free to share your comments, and again, do share the podcast with anyone and everyone. And as always, in parting, live well, love much, laugh often, and train hard. Sawadee krap.